time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit, and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation, all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. The big story this week, friends, is China. We've been hearing about this, potential trade war, though everybody's been a little careful not to use those words if you've been listening over the past many weeks and months, but it's been a building effect. But I think what a lot of people don't really want to acknowledge in the mainstream and the media is that this is a problem that goes back for decades. This problem has been built over many administrations. This is really an embarrassment, I think, to our country. And it's a big, big story. And the ramifications of this, well, it will impact all of us. Every single one of us will be impacted by this story. So that is our feature here today, friends. Also, we hear a lot about exploring planets and Mars. And then we hear all the conversation about climate change and fossil fuels and the global warming, the Earth's going to burn up. And of course, we could get hit by an asteroid tomorrow, I guess, if they're not really paying attention, huh? With this exploration, is it science or preservation of the human species? I think that's a big question. And we've got a couple of scientists on to talk about that. I want to do a deep dive into that a little bit later in the program, friends. I want to get to the top stories right now and welcome on here, please. Dennis Santiago is here. Subject matter expertise includes strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability. Michael Johns is here. He's a national co-founder and leader of the Tea Party movement, former White House speechwriter and a policy analyst with the Heritage Foundation. Welcome, gentlemen, both here. I know you've got a lot to say about China and the tariffs and all of that. Dennis, you have a really interesting article up on the platform, which I think is really solid here. And it's trade war heats up. Will America or China blink first? So let me ask you to answer that question. Who will blink first? Will it be America or China?
Oh, China already blinked. That's the cool part of it. The ploy is working. The rhetoric has turned to, no, we're still talking. And that's a back down in the world of negotiation and diplomacy. So I think we've won this round. I think right now, I'd say the art of the deal is kind of having a nice episode.
It's in play. Yeah, no, that's good. That's good. It is definitely in play. Michael, you put an interesting tweet out in the last couple of days there, which was great. It said, for the first time in decades, we have a POTUS smart and bold enough to take on China, usually unfair and sometimes illegal trade and technology practices. I told China's Global right. News Network tonight, and I watched your program, by the way. It was really, really interesting. Explain your thoughts on that tweet and where you think we're going.
Well, you're exactly right, Malcolm, that this has been a problem that's been going on for decades now. And through consecutive administrations, both the Republican and Democrat, no U.S. president has really sought to exert any pressure on China to change their unfair trade practices and their outright theft of our intellectual property until President Trump, who, of course, ran on that in 2016. So it is bold and it's unprecedented. And I think it's understandable that it's not going to come together, in a mere couple days of meetings, but progress is being made.
Right, right. You know, Michael, I got to tell you here, over all the years, I've said, and I think you might agree with this, but the problem with our political leaders is truly and honestly, they are only concerned with short-term gains as a whole. Political leaders in the United States think short-term, they think to the next election. I mean, that's what you got when you've got a representative republic like we have here. And that's the turnoff for that. But now, listen, China leaders in a lot of other countries, the Middle East leaders, others, they think more long-term. They think in hundreds and thousands of years versus, a couple of years here in the next election. I think that's one of the big pitfalls here of relationships in foreign policy. And that has shown itself up here in China, don't you think?
I think it's one of the great deficiencies that we're confronting is that you're exactly right, particularly in Congress. No one's really thinking much beyond the next election. And even within the administration, we're driven by that. Meanwhile, in China, of course, the Chinese President Xi has just been appointed president for life, and they're engaged in thinking about where China is going to be in the world 100 years from now.
Yeah, so you have
two completely contrasting sorts of strategic approaches to these things. The other issue is the fact that within an autocratic political system like China's, it's much easier to make very swift and abrupt changes in their policy structures than it is in the U.S., which is subject to public opinion and, you know, rebuttals and always inevitably opposing viewpoints in Congress, which, you know, will have some degree of input on this.
If you get anything from this program today, get what we just said. We're going to dive far deep into China in an explosive panel discussion a bit later in the program. You definitely want to hear that. Again, both Michael and Dennis are phenomenal in this topic. Both are. So we look forward to talking more about this. Listen, let's talk about the program. Well, the House Judiciary Committee Chairman Gerald Nadler here. So he comes out and says this week here, the United States is facing a constitutional crisis. Now, these words have been used before in different ways, but I've never seen a congressman come out and actually say that right on the spot. And it was stunning. It was really stunning. But you never know really what you're going to get from some of these clowns, quite frankly. And so he comes out and says that. And then, of course, Pelosi follows up and says, yeah, it's a constitutional crisis. You know, Dennis, she's like one of those puppets you put on your arms. You never know what that woman's going to say next. You know, the little puppets there. I didn't mean to give you that thought. But anyways, so tell me what you think about this Nadler with the constitutional crisis and in AG Barr. I mean, you talk about manufactured or self-inflicted pain.
Oh my God, Malcolm, this is from what we were just talking about 60 seconds ago to this. It's like from the world to like an anthill. And bottom line, I do not see any way that arguing over whether or not some guy, one member of the vast population of federal employees goes in front of Congress or not, or whether or not 16 pages of stuff with black ink over them have the black ink removed, constitutes a constitutional crisis. It's absurd that this is all the guy has to pin the entire U.S. Congress on.
The chief law enforcement officer in the nation here, people. Okay, this is Attorney General William Barr, a seasoned professional beyond professional, liked by many, has been first time around, had record numbers, was unanimous to get him in there. This time, not so much because of the partisan problems we're having here. But, you know, you take a look at this whole thing and, you know, Michael, this is about this now. So this is about the fact the attorney general's doing his job. I mean, if he didn't do his job, he'd be breaking the law and be arrested for that point. You have to redact grand jury testimony, other things in there. It's not an option. It is the law. You have to do this stuff. And here's the thing. Here's the bigger thing, Michael, that I wonder what your opinion is of this. I mean, so he gives them access, a group of these people and Democrats, to go down and read really virtually the whole thing, minus a couple little things. And and none of them take him up on it and none of them go read this report. Why do you think that is?
Because it's ultimately not about getting to the truth. It's about attempting to undermine the political credibility and political support of the president. When Nadler says there is a constitutional crisis, what he's really saying is there's a political crisis in the sense that their candidate didn't win the 2016 election. So we just had a two-year investigation into an investigation that almost certainly should never have been launched in the magnitude that it was, that completely exonerates the president and the administration. And that's a conclusion that they're apparently simply unwilling to accept. And, you know, the goal here now is just to continue to escalate the political stakes and the rhetoric and the political temperature on all of this and distract the country. And it's really a disservice.
It's a disservice. How harmful. I mean, this kind of stuff makes me ill, I have to tell you. I mean, think about you say disservice. I mean, that's being kind, obviously. And I get it. I mean, we're on family radio here, so we'll be kind. But the point is, it is a major disservice to our republic. And it goes back to the first point we made, Michael, about where our politicians stir us wrong. as it's been said many times, we don't have to worry about foreign adversaries or terrorist groups, people. We self-inflict everything right here on our homeland. I mean, that's the deal. And so I've got to just call for everybody out there, we the people, to keep them honest. Keep them honest. And this goes for everybody, Americans. I'm talking Democrats, Republicans, Independents, across the board. You got to keep them honest, people. What's happening now to what they're doing to number 45? This is historical. As I've told you in previous weeks, we're living in historical times. Speaking about historical, I want to talk about North Korea a moment here. Kim Jong-un, again, boy, he is really the gift that keeps on giving, clearly. So Kim is now shooting short-range missiles into the sea towards the direction, not that far over to Japan, but it's in the sea there, clearly. And he's flexing his muscles again. He had a visit with Putin. He's visiting with people, and he feels like, you know, he's grown a few inches in the past few months. Of course, he's had a couple of the summits with the president and so on and so forth. All right, so Dennis, where we stand right now on North Korea, we've been watching Kim and his really antics over the past couple of years now. What becomes of this with Kim? And I mean, he obviously needs some attention, you think?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, come on. The guy is begging for attention, with particularly the last stuff that he's done in the last week. I mean, you know, shooting short-range artillery rockets, which is essentially what these things are. That's what their purpose is in the inventory, into the sea, to get attention, because he knows people are going to look. You know, anytime you make fireworks, it's always good. But what he's really doing is he's throwing a tantrum because we took his boat away. Okay.
Yeah, the coal.
We took the coal ship. That was one of his very few ships that he was using to cheat on the sanctions, because it's one of the very few ships in his inventory that can actually do ship to ship transfers of cargo. And we took one of them away. Mm-hmm. That means money. That hard cash that he was using on the black market is taken away from him, and he's not happy about it. The guy has gone and talked to everybody. The Chinese basically told him, "No, we got bigger problems with Americans."
Michael, does this end well with Kim? I mean, what do you see really happening with this? Because this could become a real problem.
Well, they clearly have a strategic decision that they're going to make. I mean, the goal and the objective of these discussions is nothing less than denuclearizing the entire Korean peninsula. Mm-hmm. And while there's been rhetorical lip service paid to that by the North Koreans, the ultimate decision is going to be theirs as to whether they do that. I think there's an extraordinary amount of economic pressure now being applied through these sanctions, even though China and possibly Russia are violating those sanctions, which was sort of partly what was behind the boat incident, the coal transport. But, you know, they're going to have a decision to make whether they want to develop their country and sort of join the rest of the world, or continue in isolation, one of the world's worst poverty situations, an oppressive regime, and maintain some nuclear weapon development program.
This next story really rubs me, and it has to do with the former Secretary of State, John Kerry. Okay, so it's been reported for some time now that Kerry has been negotiating with various groups, actually, in foreign policy. Specifically, Iran has been at the top of that list, and that's not only Iran. And, you know, a lot of people have not made much of it or turned the other way or not paid a lot of attention. But, you know, now we see a lot of the reports from the past couple of weeks. I mean, and he's done some serious damage, I think, to this relationship. And really, from what I've gathered, like, I don't know what you've heard in circles, but he's actually telling them not to pay attention to the Trump administration. And then, of course, they're all waiting to see if Trump is positioned to take 2020 or whether he goes down, because they're dying to get a left radical nut job in there. Clearly, I hope America can see this with open eyes here, what's going on. But, you know, we have something called the Logan Act, and that's always been a funny late night comic line as well. It's never, say, used. But when somebody's doing this at this level, I mean, shouldn't John Kerry be, at this moment, be used as an example? And should he not pay the consequences for what's going on?
I think there clearly should be a criminal referral for the purposes of a Federal Justice Department investigation. It's precisely what he has done, what he has said, what commitments he's made, promises he's made, because the Logan Act is a well-intentioned act, even though it has been rarely used, designed essentially to ensure that our foreign policy and is conducted by our government and not individuals who seek to privatize it. And the problem with John Kerry is that his term as Secretary of State ended and he sort of just continued on in the function, continuing to meet with foreign ministers and heads of state and to provide counsel and guidance that were essentially contradicting those of the Trump administration.
Isn't he a rogue Secretary of State?
Yeah, that certainly appears to me to be how he's acting. And it's really, you know, you can contrast it with, you know, even past Republican presidents who once they, you know, with left, you know, kind of disengaged from this process completely. This is a Secretary of State who has continued to leverage all of his various contacts around the world, sort of views the Iranians, in my view, as almost friends, and has provided them allegedly with counsel on how to circumvent sanctions, how to maintain, you know, the engagement in the global economic system, and ultimately how to circumvent Donald Trump. And that's very counterproductive to U.S. interests. And it is, in fact, criminal.
It's criminal, and it's an outrage, an absolute outrage. The 2020 election is coming quick. And, you know, again, if they can't stop or shut you down or shut you up, they find ways to do it here. And, of course, this last one is with co-founder Chris Hughes of Facebook coming out and suggesting, yeah, he says, you know, it's time to break up Facebook. He says, yeah, Mark's power is unprecedented and un-American, the co-founder says. He says it is time to break up Facebook. Now, of course, you got Facebook, you got Twitter, you got all these big outlets that are running, well, talk about rogue. I mean, they're running rogue and then some. Michael, you and I have never talked about this topic before. I mean, I think this is a serious, serious problem. It's probably the biggest problem we talk about today, because if we can't get the word out, censorship, this is kind of where it starts and where it ends, isn't it?
Yeah, even if there was no censorship and Facebook was honoring, you know, all of its sort of obligations to the country, I think that on an antitrust basis, you'd have a compelling reason to break it up, given the almost monopoly power that it's exerting over news dissemination and communication. But then you add on the fact that it's really operating in a regulatory category that exempts it from a lot of liability that it would have as a publisher. But then it's starting to act now like a publisher, meaning it is starting to determine what appears, what content is and is not acceptable. Mm-hmm. At that point, the regulations really need to be reformed. Liability law needs to shift. And that requires that this administration, you know, act in a regulatory way 100%. As it relates to it.
100%, Michael. Michael, I started out with trying to connect a little Margaret with Aunt Tilly across the country. You remember that's how it all started out. Oh, yeah, we'll just, you know, share some ideas, thoughts, and secrets. It was a crazy idea at the time, but it really caught on. And now you've got billions, over 3 billion
half
subscribers.
Actually more than that.
Is it? Well, you know, listen, guys, I think there are multiple planets in here potentially. I don't know. They're all
actually it is. It's the way that Facebook is organized. People don't really realize that the American population of Facebook is tiny compared to the entire global population of Facebook. We are not that big in that system.
I just see this as the biggest, one of the biggest problems we're going to have ahead. And I think it's our duty. It's our duty at America Out Loud. It's our duty as we the people, friends. It's our duty to stay on this story in a big, big way, because this has got major, major ramifications here for all of us. And again, I ask you before, I'll ask you again, where have the conservatives been when it comes to these kinds of movements, when it comes to owning social media outlets, when it comes to owning television networks and newspapers, when it comes to owning all of these outfits, as well as our universities and our campuses and our education system? Where have the conservatives been? I'm afraid they've been asleep at the wheel, people. And I don't say that gleefully. It's really an embarrassment that the radicals have been smart enough to buy all this up and own it all, and now they control a lot of the feeds out there. So hence the importance of what we do here at America Out Loud, and the basis of this as a God-loving freedom of speech and let the silent voices be heard, we say, and that's exactly what we do here. So, all right, so listen, Michael Johns, Dennis Santiago will both be back in a bigger panel discussion on China. Really looking forward to that. They'll be joined up with Ava Armstrong. We'll we'll talk more into China in a panel discussion there. And next here, a couple of really interesting gentlemen coming up here on scientists on the science or preservation of the human species. I'm looking forward to this one. More Viewpoint, friends, in just a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Dr. Jay Lehr is here. He's a senior policy analyst with the International Climate Science Coalition and former science director of the Heartland Institute. And Tom Harris is executive director of the Canada-based International Climate Science Coalition. These guys are on the front lines. They're columnists here on the platform, and it's always a privilege and my pleasure to have them join us here. Guys, I just want to open up the mics here and have real conversation. I want people over the next 15, 20 minutes to learn some things from us, and no better guys than to talk about and learn from than you two. So, all right, Jay, I'm going to throw you a curveball right here, right at the top of the program here. And I'm serious question now. Serious question. When we talk about all of the people that are talking about different things happening right now about, you know, the greenhouse effect and the fossil fuel problem, which you guys are on the front lines about, and you want to know more about that, people, go to AmericaOutloud.com and you'll get a whole lot from these gentlemen about this topic here. But that, you know, it could be the point of ending civilization. And we hear the mark of even pretty close in 12 years where some of the numbers thrown around here. But then you look at things like, you know, we could be hit by an asteroid next week, potentially, Jay, if they're not paying attention. Or what about the sun exploding? Or what about something else happening? And I mean, you know, I don't know. How much fear should we have today with our planet? And are there any concerns, Jay?
Malcolm, we should have no fear whatsoever. Our concerns are battling poverty and disease, and that's where our money should be spent. Now, I think developing technology to someday get to Mars, build a new place, a colony on the moon. These are great things for scientific research, and we should be doing things that someday, if our planet was ever in jeopardy, that we might have a colony somewhere that our species could survive. But I think to put it in the minds of the public that there is a current fear or a fear in any number of centuries forward is a very bad idea. And worrying about an asteroid hitting us, we should do research. We should be looking at all these terrestrial, extraterrestrial bodies and where they're going. But they shouldn't have any emotional impact on us. We should worry more about driving our car to the grocery store. We should worry more. Do we really want an autonomous car driving us on the highway? So you have to look at the cost-benefit ratios of using your brain to worry about things that are not likely to happen, rather to use your brain to be concerned with things that are the here and now.
Well, a lot of this is fear-based. This is actually a really good place to start this dialogue, because a lot of what we're talking about in the news today, people, up front with the top stories and later in the program, are all fear-based. You hear Dr. Jay Lehr there, and he's right. I mean, a lot of these are distractions that powerful people put out, and some of them, it's to line their coffers, their wallets, and to get rich, in the case of a.k.a. Al Gore and many others. I mean, he's not the only, it's a whole industry behind this, people. But it goes deeper than that. But here's the thing, Jay, and before I go to Tom, I want to say to you this, following up on what you say there, I got to tell you, I don't know that we're doing a good job of it, because just in the past week, I've seen a series of social media mentions and others from 9-year-olds and 11-year-olds and other young people who are concerned, and parents who are putting it out there that the kids are coming home crying because the teachers and some of the educators are telling them bad things about greenhouse, about fossil fuels, and that the world is going to really end, and that our leaders are not paying attention. This is real fear, Jay, that's being put into the kids. What do we do about it?
Malcolm, there has never been a better way to control people, to control society, than by fear. It's been done for as long as our civilization has been here. Mm-hmm. These people are flat out evil.
that's the line of the morning, Tom, that you can't beat what he just said. I'm telling you, nobody can today. Those people are outright evil. That's a quotable quote from Dr. Jay Lehrer, and he's exactly right. So Tom, it is a fear-based sort of thing, and I think the generation and the kids, a lot of them truly believe that Chicken Little is alive and well, buddy. What do we do?
Yeah, it's very sad, because I was reading from a professor of education, I believe, University of Minnesota, I think it was. He was saying, Russell Ackoff, he was saying that the lack of a positive vision of alternative futures is, in fact, a threat to our survival. So if people think the future is going to be bad, that is a threat by itself. And that's one of the reasons why I like the space program, is because it's an optimistic vision of the future, that things can be better, that we can learn more, we can actually develop technologies that help us on the Earth. And Buzz Aldrin actually puts it very well. He says that we need to have the humility to protect the Earth, but the courage to expand into space. And either of them by themselves is the sound of one hand clapping. You know, he says that we have to do both. And that's where I come down. That's why, in fact, I support environmental protection when it comes to real environmental concerns like real pollution. Right. And of course, I support the expansion into space, because any species that stays in a small ecosystem is far more vulnerable to extermination eventually than if we expand outward. And there are many things that in the very long term could be a threat to our survival. So it just makes sense to expand.
Tom, I got to say to you, sincerely, blessings to you for what you just said. I so appreciate that, because you say here that, and I love that when I hear that, yes, we're environmentally conscious. We're worried about these things we can control, the pollution. And that's important, people. Let's not lose sight of that a moment, because, you know, it's like my kids. I taught them, when you see trash in the street, you pick it up. When you see something that doesn't look right, you fix it, or you clean the oceans, or these are basic fundamental things that we should all do as respectful human beings, no matter where we fall on the political aisle. But there's a sense out there that people are trying to plant a seed on the radical side that somehow conservatives don't care. And there's nothing further from the truth, people. Let me tell you right now, I, for one, I really care. And I know Tom Harris, what he just said, he cares a great deal. I know Dr. Jay Lehrer does. So let's make that point right now. We all care about this magnificent blue marble and what we live on here. We're blessed every day. I tell you people every day out there. So I don't want to lose sight of that. I just want to take a moment to say that. It's important. It's important.
And you know, the space program has actually helped develop environmental consciousness. In fact, it's interesting that within 2 years of the first views of the Earth rising over the moon from Apollo 8, okay, we saw the formation of Environment Canada, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, Greenpeace, who I don't support, but nevertheless, at that time, had their heart in the right place, and of course, the world's first Earth Day. All those things happened within 2 years of that image of the Earth as a fragile ball in space. And many people say that those images were the most important of the 20th century.
Dr. Jay Lehrer, now, right now, I see in the past week or two, Bernie Sanders is teaming up very effectively with this AOC character. And they become a Batman and Robin team, if you will, on the whole fossil fuel conversation. And of course, Bernie is hitching his wagon to AOC because she's not running for president. He is. And he doesn't quite see her as a threat. And maybe he can get some star power from her. So you kind of got to give some credit to Bernie Sanders in a way, Jay, in a weird sort of way, because you know damn well he's not going to get any help from the DNC or the other radicals in there. Yeah.
Yeah, yes, but he isn't going to get anywhere. The polls have come out making it very clear that the public is going to go for plain vanilla, Joe Biden will be running, I think, clearly against President Trump. And everything that AOC and Bernie do in the background only actually helps President Trump, because we still have some really objective, level-headed people in this country that know both of them are really nutty. The world cannot run without fossil fuel. And the only impact they're having with the fear-mongering is raising our electric bills, because the more we feed wind and solar into the power grid, the more expensive our power gets. But what they are talking about can never happen. It can only raise our cost of living.
You know, Jay, one of the last article you and Tom have on AmericaOutloud.com actually plays into what you just said. And I just want to touch a moment on that. America without fossil fuels would be a 19th century nation. Now, listen, take a moment here. Let's take a moment, because that's an important headline right there. And what are we really talking? As all these people run around and start, you know, with this conversation about fossil fuels, I mean, what are we really talking? I mean, in real terms, Jay, if we were to take their advice, let's just not, I'm not talking about the economics and the cost. We know what that's going to do to us, but what kind of a life would we be living? Would it really be back into the 18th century?
Oh, very definitely. There's no question. We would not have heating or air conditioning. We would not have automobiles or airplanes. We wouldn't be able to get to Hawaii. It's absurd. It is so absurd, it can never happen, which is why it really doesn't bother me, other than the fact that the more they force alternate fuels into our system, the more our costs go up unnecessarily. Everybody will wake up to this. I mean, you know, you have 20 people running for president on the Democratic side. They're all going to be falling to the wayside shortly. But they're all building on this anti-capitalism, anti-fossil fuel socialism. And they certainly don't have a good view of history, because socialism has never worked. It can never work. The human mind will not accept being equal and not looking at how hard they work to rise up the ladder. So it's sound and fury, but it doesn't signify nothing. It signifies increasing our cost of living.
Yeah, yeah. Tom, I want to ask you about this story. We talked about the young people, and we talked about the influence on this generation and what they're thinking. You see this very interesting story coming out of California and the board of the California State Teachers Retirement System. Quite an interesting video circulating and story about this, which has, you know, how they're using the kids to talk about, again, the effects of global warming and fossil fuels, and that the teachers' retirement fund has $7 billion invested in fossil fuels. And it got into a crash in the pension fund meeting in Sacramento there this past week. What do you know about this story?
It's sad, though, because, I mean, you have young people, and these are very young. Some of them look like eight-year-olds, who are really concerned, and they truly believe that the Earth is being destroyed by the use of fossil fuels. And, I mean, the sad thing is that if you actually look at the data, and if the children were shared, you know, if the information was shared with them and said, look, since 1880, there's only been slightly more than 1 degree Celsius temperature rise, and that's been a good thing because we've been coming out of the little ice age. We have had, you know, gradual sea level rise. It's been going on for thousands of years. Many of these facts are so easy that the students, if they're exposed to it, will realize that the climate scare is really a hoax, and that they're being manipulated into supporting something that really is not just a waste of their time, it's very bad for them. Because as I said earlier, this pessimistic anticipation of what's going to happen in the future is terrible, not just for children, but for everybody. And I hope that, you know, somebody starts to educate them properly.
Well, that's it. We hope that somebody starts to educate. You can't rely on the educators, clearly, but you see what they're doing to the young people. I mean, they're getting them at 8, 9, 10, 11. And, you know, this is bad stuff. I mean, this is what they do in not to be a different topic here, but this is what they do in the jihad world as well. They take the kids at 8, 9, and they brainwash them people. Think about it for a moment here. Sincerely now, we're no better than they are, than the terrorist people are, if we're doing the same thing. Shame on these people for doing what they're doing.
And in a way, it's totally counterproductive if you're a socialist, if you're a social justice warrior, because the net result of going off fossil fuels would mean that the poor would suffer more than anybody.
There's an old saying you've heard that he who does not have a knowledge of history is certain to repeat it. Mm-hmm. And the best person that ever used youth in promoting lies was Hitler. The Hitler youth groups were a major part of his taking over Germany. And that's what is going on now, using young children who know nothing about the topic, making them fearful, and then using them as a catapult to get the attention of the public to something that is absolutely untrue. It's very unfortunate. It's gone on in society for a very long time, and Hitler was a master of it.
A big thank you here to Dr. Jay Lehrer, Tom Harris. Friends, we're going to now take this big turn here and do the deep dive into China, the tariffs, and all that's happening there. And I want to ask you this question. I want you to think about, as we pause here a moment, is this a fight on who defines the 21st century? Stay right there, friends, as Viewpoint continues.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Okay, friends, so I posed the question up front, is this a fight on who defines the 21st century? Well, we've seen a lot of this coming. I mean, we know that we've been hearing the sound bites on China for a very long time again. And as I said up front, this isn't a problem that happened yesterday. This is a problem that is decades in the making. And in fact, a lot of people, you know, that sit there and point to Trump. I mean, Trump is the one, as Michael Johns was saying up front here in that tweet, is the one who was bold enough and brazen enough to take it on. You know, every other politician has suggested that they would do that as well previously, but they never did that. But then again, I digress, people. Isn't that the definition of a politician, right? All right, let's get into our panel discussion here on China here, please, and welcome on here. Joining us here on this program, Ava Armstrong is here. She's a political commentator, radio personality here at America Out Loud, and Ava is a terrific author. Her books are on the on Amazon or the America Out Loud bookstore, friends. She writes about heroes and veterans, police officers, and hardworking middle-class folks. And talking about hardworking people, let's bring on here, you heard them earlier in the program here, Michael Johns and Dennis Santiago. Michael is a national co-founder and leader of the Tea Party movement. Again, has worked as a speechwriter for the White House and with the Heritage Foundation, which you all know who that group is. And again, the beloved Dennis Santiago is here. Dennis is, bar none, a patriot, a phenomenal writer. Got to check out his columns on the platform. We've got to build his ego up, people, so he keeps writing all this great stuff for us. Right to Ava?
Definitely.
Got to keep building that up. Dennis is...
I'm blushing.
Exactly. He's an expert, as I'm choking here. He's an expert in strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, and global stability. It is great to have all of you here. And let's talk now about China, please, and discuss that. Ava, I want to start with you since you're just joining the conversation here. And so the latest news on this is that things were moving along pretty good. We were hearing for the past several weeks, Ava, that they were close to a deal. And that negotiations were coming along real well. And we heard this from several camps, and it seemed like, okay, it would be inevitable. In fact, a lot of us were thinking there would be success. And then when it was getting closer, as I said up front there, all of a sudden China started to change some of the rules, and they have a history of doing this. So they agreed to certain things they started to change their minds about, sort of like a lot of other people do around the world. They said, well, we don't really want to do that. And they started pulling out a lot of the agreements already that had been agreed upon in the negotiations, making them fall apart at the last minute. President Trump comes out and says, okay, well, we talked about tariffs. He said, here they are, and we'll give you 25% off the top. And of course, everybody was aghast, and the stock market was doing some hiccups as well. What do you think about this at this point, and what happens next?
I think this has been a long time in the making, for one thing. And before we get into the nuts and bolts of all of that and the history of it, first of all, you have to understand that China is unique in their culture. Reneging on a deal is not something that is unusual for them. If they promise to do something and lie or steal or cheat, they think that's perfectly fine. So right up front, President Trump has to understand that. And I understand that they did renege on a deal and a part of the deal that they were working on. And then Trump pulled back. He said, no, we can't do this way. We have to do it properly. And that really ticked off the Chinese. And, you know, there we sit.
A lot of feelings kind of were getting a little hurt there. You're right. You're dealing with a sensitive subject topic here, but you're also thinking, you're also dealing with a cultural divide. And you put it out there really well, Ava. Mike, I want to go to you next on this, because I got to tell you, I watched your television interview with the China television folks there. And it was very, very well done. You were, so let me tell everybody, because this is worth talking about. You were on there with a couple of Chinese representatives. First, the host was China, for China Television, and a representative out of Canada, and who really was, to me, talking more socialist conversation, if anything, here. So you were the only really free-loving patriot in the group there, I guess, is what I would say. I was wondering how you were going to handle that, Michael. But I enjoyed watching it, and you held your ground very well. But pick up on where Ava was right now in defining the Chinese. Now, you were on a broadcast with them. How is it dealing with the Chinese? And how much does Donald Trump need to be careful of with this cultural divide, that you don't have a complete insult? Because I notice he keeps coming out, Michael, and he keeps saying, I have a lot of respect for the Chinese. I love Xi Jinping. And he keeps saying that, right? That's not accidental.
Well, one of the benefits of President Trump, which, you know, he ran on this in the 2016 election, was a centerpiece of his foreign policy planks, is he's had a longstanding understanding of China, exactly that, China's violations of trade practices and their engagement in theft and reverse engineering of our products, intellectual property theft, the currency manipulation, all these issues that are now being addressed in these negotiations. And I think the good news is that through trade tariffs, and none of us are champions of trade tariffs, but they are a mechanism to exert some degree of pressure for the elimination and correction of these issues. I think we've gotten probably the most serious discussions with the Chinese government in our lifetime in resolving these. So it's a great tribute, really, to President Trump's skill sets, capabilities, and understanding of it. The challenge is these reforms absolutely have to be enforceable. And we have traditionally used things like the World Trade Organization and other entities to address them. They've taken a long time. There have been repeated violations. China has found other ways to work around the system. So that's kind of where the discussions are at this point. There's not a breakdown in the talks. They're going to continue likely in Beijing. And even though there's been a escalation in the sense of us increasing tariffs, as we said would be the case if the agreement hadn't been met by yesterday, I think there's still good reason for optimism that this is going to turn out favorable in U.S. terms and address the underlying problems that we've been neglecting for decades.
If it's going to turn out favorable, and we have been neglecting it for decades, forever, you did a great description right now of the Chinese culture and how they've been smart enough to take advantage of our system here. And there's a lot to that. And there's been a theme throughout the show here today, people, on that point that I make right now with you. You can figure it out yourself, what I'm speaking about here. But Dennis, I got to tell you that if we are to have a good ending to this, it looks to me like there's going to have to be sort of an olive branch somewhere. You don't really see the Chinese, again, are very proudful people. This is why my guess is President Trump continues to come out and pat Xi Jinping on the back and talk about his great relationship and so on and so forth. Again, he is doing his art of the deal and broad daylight with everybody, as he does with others. So how do we get to that end deal that Michael puts out there and says, I think it will, and because I have the confidence that he has, but I'm not sure of the path to get there. The kind of the battle lines have been drawn.
The battle lines have definitely been drawn on this one. I find watching the statements of the Chinese commentators and really what they are doing when they speak that way, they are speaking for aspects of the Chinese government's position on this. They are very clearly signaling that they have internal issues that make it so that they have trouble codifying things and committing to things. So they look at this last cycle. They basically agreed in principle to a regime of controls that would work for both sides. And at the very last minute, and this is very Chinese, as they start to circulate it around inside the cronyism world that is the power base of China, there's people going like, hey, you take it, that's my rice bowl, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's not going to work for me. Interestingly enough, as that started to occur in the United States, on our side of things, you had some of our industries which have become, as I like to put it, addicted to global outsourcing. Also saying, hey, you know, we don't want that because you're going to make it more expensive for us to do our business. Mm-hmm. So you've got two professional classes in two countries that are tugging on two governments trying to find something that will work for their long-term strategic interests being overwhelmed by short-term industrial interests. That is something that both governments have to figure out how to do. They haven't figured out how to do it well yet. But to Trump's credit, what he just did was bring that issue out into the open for everybody to take a look at. And I think that is one of the reasons that I'm pretty positive about how this is going to end.
All right. Our style of life has changed here in America based on that global outsourcing you just talked about. I mean, that's changed over the past 20, 30 years here. We've outsourced a lot of this, which really has become political talk for elections when people don't have jobs in middle America. Now, as you keep pointing out, Dennis, in the future here, we have the artificial intelligence movement still coming. AI is coming, whether you like it or not. And one day it's going to show up at your doorstep here. So there's a change that's going to happen in America. Now, there are those who say we need to bring some of that manufacturing back, and it's happening already. As you see manufacturing jobs increasing, you see the president has made this a major point of his being in Washington, and he promised that, and he's carried through on it, as he's done a lot of things, even though it's unsettling to many, many people. All right, let's talk about exports and imports and back and forth specifically. When you look at exports, our top five American exports to China, we're looking at machinery. We're looking at equipment like electronic equipment, a little bit of it, spacecraft and aircraft a lot, cars, petroleum. These are the things our major exports to China. Now, but what China sends to us, so our imports here, phone system devices, a lot of smartphones, people. That's where your smartphones are coming from. Your computers, your technology here, television receivers, monitors, projectors. In fact, you remember that scandal a while back with Samsung with the cameras and all? Where do you think that all comes from? So you think about that. A lot of electronics and technology coming from China into our country. That should tell you something and define the basis of what's happening here. That don't they have the edge moving forward technologically on that point? Michael, let me go to you for that question first, please. Doesn't that give them the edge technologically moving into this next growth cycle?
Well, our leverage is that China, well, it's obviously a growing economy, has grown in an astounding way over the last few decades, largely because of these unfair trade practices. It seems to be very export dependent, more export dependent than we are as a proportion of their total economy. So for China to continue to grow and for them to get the kind of market share and economies of scale that they want to see
in their macroeconomy, they have absolutely got to have access to the largest market in the world, and that is us. And the good news, I think, for this moment is that President Trump, through tax cuts and regulatory relief, really has the U.S. economy working for the best, in the best way it has in, you know, at least a decade, if not longer, from the standpoint of, you know, over 5 million new jobs created and GDP starting to exceed 3%. These are all really constructive. Simultaneously, the Chinese economy has actually had some serious degree of setbacks. Their growth has slowed a bit, starting to have issues with commercial lending. There's been some reduction in their manufacturing capacity and hiring and wage pressures. So they're facing some issues that historically we've faced in the 80s and 90s, and they really have some degree of desperation, I believe, in maintaining access to the U.S.
That's a great point.
U.S. market.
Yeah, they're running behind the curve a little bit on everything you just say there. But to me, Ava, that puts them in a very vulnerable position, especially right now with these trade deals. And again, back to the tariffs. I have to tell you, if you listen to everything Michael just put out there, and then you do the math quickly, and then you see Trump with the tariffs now, and you see what China's doing, and they've dug a hole for themselves, clearly. Let me just call it what it is. But I have to tell you, in many ways, right now, our government is really saying uncle to China. I mean, they're tightening the screws right now to China. And this tariff deal, and based on the economic conditions back in China and what's been happening, this has major ramifications there to the Chinese economy, don't you think?
Oh, definitely. I think China will suffer greatly if Trump does put all of these tariffs on products. The thing that what will happen in America, the product lines will increase, but it won't be to the point where you couldn't afford to buy something. I don't think. I really don't think it's going to be as earth-shattering for America as it will be for China. China's in a very strange historical spot right now. They're kind of where we were at the turn of the last century. Mm-hmm. They're at the point where, you know, mechanization and robotics and everything else is going to end the making of buggy whips and, you know, all kinds of things. I mean, you know, they're going to have to make a huge historical adjustment. And I think they know that. And I think Trump is going to give them a deal that they will take.
That really is that's the big elephant in the room right there is, will he? Because right now, Dennis, and it's anybody's guess what will happen. I mean, as I said moments ago, the lines being drawn and all, I think he's going to have to do something to save face and to give back. But there's been so much damage right now with China over the past many, many years. They, again, and this is from the lack of real leadership here in our country. I mean, you can't blame this stuff on China. You have to blame this stuff on American politicians. So people don't go around like a lot of our media puts all these sound bites on there where you all hate China. It's really, China's just being, they've been smart in the game to take advantage of the fools who you all elect to office. I mean, Dennis, tell me I'm wrong.
Well, okay. So In a sense, yeah. I mean, you know, the Chinese have outmaneuvered our politicians.
Damn right they have.
For quite a long while. I mean, you know, like, remember, Barack Obama tried to engage China on trade during his time. He got outmaneuvered like you wouldn't believe, right?
And Bush and Clinton, and just bring it back. They've all
Yeah, all the way. Yeah, the last guy to actually made some pretty good strides with China was Richard Nixon.
Richard Nixon.
I mean, you know, because he's the one who opened the door to Red China. But on this, by the same token, the Chinese have brought a lot of the problems that they're facing now onto themselves.
Oh, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. They have a major problem in what they've done. They went for this global outsourcing thing, hook, line, and sinker. Now, the thing that is most important in the world of the global economy is not the finished goods. It's the sub-assemblies. Those sub-assemblies can be made anywhere. And it's very possible to onshore a lot of that sub-assembly production back in the United States. When you add artificial intelligence and robotics to it, you can create any products you want anywhere in the world, which is kind of how it works now. Okay. The problem for the Chinese is because they went in and built all these factories, they took a lot of their peasant class people, forced them off their farms and into factory cities, okay? And now they've got their population moved into an industrial economy, kind of the same way that the industrial revolution around the turn of the 20th century was starting off. And it is about to get the world's biggest reduction in force. They are, when the revolution of how the next stage of manufacturing takes place on this planet, those people are going to get laid off. Okay, that is a huge cultural problem for the Chinese, and they created it themselves. Are they going to send those people back to the farms? How are they going to do that? How are they going to do that without creating turmoil inside their country? These people are deathly worried about what they have done to themselves. I don't think they're dumb. I think they realize fully what the consequences of this are. And if anything happens, it's the United States that's going to make sure that the worst doesn't happen to them. So it's up to us to actually get these guys out of a jam, is the way I'm looking at it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the interesting news bites in the past few days is when Chuck Schumer came out and actually was supporting. This was like everybody was dumbfounded at the moment there, you know, and wondering. A lot of people were asking me, what's Chuck up to? I mean, like, there's not a lot of trust there, clearly. And he came out and supported what was happening with China. So this does sort of become, and this is a very much a bipartisan issue. Why did Chuck do that, do you think? Ava, why did he do that for the media soundbite? So this is our last go around here. So give me your last comments on that. And what are your thoughts as to why Schumer came out with those comments?
I think he sees the writing on the wall. I really do. I think he understands the gravity of this issue, mm-hmm. for not only for China, but for America. It's very important.
Yeah, well, but that doesn't, that still leaves me with my head shaking. Michael, I don't buy it.
Yeah, I'm a little more cynical. I would say two things happened. Number one is the Trump White House asked for his support and got it. But number two, which I think is encouraging, is that he sees the odds sort of shifting in our favor, that the president is going to end up with a very favorable agreement. So in supporting it at this point, he starts to position the Democratic Party in 2020 to sort of say we were also a part of this, as opposed to sort of saying we opposed you at every single step and look at the great accomplishment that you achieved. That would put them in a great political vulnerability. I think that's the political dimension of it.
Michael, that is a great analysis.
I share the cynicism, but I also have some optimism.
Well, you always do. I mean, you always do. Your glass is always half full. Sometimes I'm not sure what the hell you're drinking, but I get it. Okay, so
coffee.
Having said that, great conversation here. Michael Johns, Ava Armstrong, Dennis Santiago. The whole program, friends, as always, is brilliant analysis, great people. That's what Viewpoint brings every week. I mean, you can't beat this. And being able to get, again, real voices and understand what some of the problems are. I think the difference in this program is that you're hearing truth. It's not always, you know, it's not always sugarcoated. It's never sugarcoated with what you're hearing in media heads or political talking heads, but it is the truth. The truth can hurt at times. It never was meant to feel good, but it is the truth, and we're better off to be an informed public. We the people, that's what we deserve at the very least, people. Speaking about an informed public, I am proud to tell you that the biggest project of my history starts this coming Thursday. I hope you'll tune in at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's called The Voice of a Nation. Malcolm. It's an interesting program, friends. We've never done anything quite like this one. It is very raw. It is very dramatic. It is very authentic. It is very to the point. It's a program that will leave you thinking and scratching your head. You'll be better informed. You'll also be alert on the issues. This is different. The Voice of a Nation. Tune in 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time starting on Thursday. I promise you, it's a show you won't want to miss from there forward. Think of it as a bit of a diary, if you will. It's a diary for we the people. Our biggest problems we'll take on every day, not sugarcoated, to the point, with real people in a whole different setting. We even have a peanut gallery attached to this one. You'll love it, I promise you. The Out Loud Truth continues back at AmericaOutLoud.com.